welcome to the Mental Breakdown Morning Show. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Richard, have you ever noticed that in the morning, we have sort of a regular routine that we use when we're getting ready for the show?
I did. I noticed.
You did notice that?
I did notice.
Well,
go ahead.
Some would call that a routine.
Ooh.
Some would call that structure. But if it got really bad, we would call that OCD.
If we had to do it.
If we had to do
it. That's right. If my day couldn't progress unless I did that little routine that we do in the morning, that would be a problem.
That would be a problem.
Because it would interfere with my life.
Right. And that's where we get OCD.
Okay.
Obsessive compulsive disorder. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about an article from the Washington Post from the 11th. Okay. So it was about a week old. Because today's the 18th.
Yeah.
So it's about a week old. Written by Valerie Strauss. Called "What Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Does to a Young Mind When It Grows Unchecked."
Right.
Oh, I don't know why I said goes.
Because it fits better. Syntactically, it fits better.
Thank you.
At least.
He usually doesn't give me those type of syntactic compliments.
Time.
So that's great. So, but it's a great... It's a great article because it begins with a question about, you know, what do I do with my child and how do I, you know, get treatment for my child with OCD without necessarily using medication.
The other thing that struck me about this article, they talk about a young mind. General wisdom, sort of conventional wisdom, is that OCD doesn't appear until the teen years.
Right.
That's when it becomes more obvious.
Right.
It's evident, however, if you know what you're looking for, it's evident in very young children.
Right.
And it's not just lining up toys. There are a lot of signs that a child is struggling with OCD, even at the early elementary school ages.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what's striking about this article. Because if you leave it unchecked, it's going to get... The assumption is it's going to get worse.
It is. And, you know, there's a lot of things about OCD, especially OCD in children, that is a little bit different than that in adults.
That's right.
You know, I had the opportunity, I was invited to co-author a chapter of a book on treating OCD in children and adolescents a number of years ago. The book was edited by our friend Dr. Eric Storch, who's over at the Rogers Center and at USF,
who is an internationally known expert in this area of OCD and in people of all ages.
Right. Yeah. And his co-editor was Dr. Tanya Murphy, who was from University of Florida, and now she's at University of South Florida. Very, very good researchers and clinicians in the area of OCD and. Mm-hmm. Pandas and all kinds of different disorders associated with OCD.
Right.
So, and it was great because when we wrote that article, chapter.
Right.
I wrote that chapter with a friend of mine, Dr. Doug Scheidel. We were writing about OCD associated disorders. And so we wrote about Tourette's disorder and trichotillomania and kleptomania and some of those other sort of compulsive based behaviors and disorders that has sort of been rearranged in the new Diagnostic and Statistical Manual and are now in some ways more associated with OCD than they were in the past. But OCD in children and adolescents, you know, it does look different. It presents differently because, I always go back to vocabulary. You know, it's difficult to know. A compulsion begins as a thought, an urge. And so an adult can express that. They can talk about that. They can say, you know, I feel like if I don't do this, this is going to happen. A seven-year-old may not be able to articulate that. And so we see these unusual, repetitive, maybe strange behaviors. Mm-hmm. But if the seven-year-old can't articulate, I have this urge to do it. I feel compelled to do it. I can't move on unless I do it. Instead, what we see is behavior outbursts, we see agitation, we see sometimes rages and these emotional behavioral symptoms that are problematic.
That's right. And what we have to remember with children is they don't realize that this is abnormal.
Right.
The typical 5 or 6 or 8 or 9 year old has only known this all of his or her life. They've only known this one thing. So to them, this is what it's like to be a person.
Right.
That everybody else must be doing this too. You assume that this is normal behavior.
Right.
It's not until you get out into the world, and it might be in your teens or 20s, that you realize, wow, there's really something wrong here, because the rest of the world isn't as captured by these things as I am, enslaved or imprisoned as these things as I am. But by then, and that's why the article points out that it takes 12 to 18 years to get an accurate diagnosis.
Right.
Okay, and that's the problem, is that this disorder goes undiagnosed in young children because they're not seeking treatment.
Right.
They don't realize there's anything wrong. And clinicians typically aren't thinking about OCD because it looks like so many other things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, again, when we work with children, the primary reporter is the parent.
Right.
And so what we tend to diagnose and treat is based upon the interpretation of the behavior from the parent.
Right.
And that can be problematic because what the parent sees is rigidity, the parent sees noncompliance, the parent sees that, you know, temper tantrums and emotional dysregulation and these kinds of things. And so we begin to treat it that way. When really it may be at its root, it may be OCD.
Even recently, I saw an adult who came in and explained very, very carefully that she had a depression and anxiety and she wasn't sleeping. But as I heard her story, the biggest problem was that she has obsessive thoughts that she can't stop. The anxiety that she's feeling is not a primary problem. It's secondary to the obsessions.
Right.
She gets anxious about that. The depression is not a primary problem. It's a result of the obsessive and compulsive behaviors that she cannot get rid of. They're damaging her life. They're ruining her sleep. She's having all these other symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, she's been on medication for depression and anxiety when the primary problem is OCD.
Yeah. And the other, I guess, challenging part of OCD, even though in the new Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, OCD is in its own category. Mm-hmm. It has been removed and separated from the other anxiety disorders. The problem is that, like all the other anxiety disorders, because it is, in the fringe at least, an anxiety disorder, is that it evolves over time.
That's right.
The real struggle, and I've certainly experienced this with patients, and it has been very, very challenging to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll have a child come in with OCD symptoms, because we've worked with that for a number of years, so we know what to look for. And so you see a child with OCD and you focus on it and you do the cognitive behavioral therapy or the exposure response therapy, the ERP therapy, and you start to resolve the OCD stuff, and then all of a sudden those anxieties change to something else.
Right.
And so now we have agoraphobic types of behaviors, or we have phobic behaviors. And so it just kind of evolves and changes over time because, again, the child's not really sophisticated enough. I don't know if sophisticated is the right word, but the child doesn't have enough insight to say, you know, these are the tools and strategies I'm using here. I'm going to implement them over here. So instead, the source of the anxiety is just replaced with something else.
Yeah, we see this with pain, too.
Right.
People talk about the pain is moving.
Right.
What they're doing is just displacing it. They're moving it from place to place. They don't get rid of it. It just moves or morphs into something else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're always chasing this phantom. But the other thing in children is that the article that we're referencing here this morning is about a young man, and he was treated for ADHD because it looked like he had ADHD.
Right.
But in fact, it was his OCD symptoms that were keeping him active and out of class and not wanting to go to school. He didn't want to go to school during the day. Okay,
right.
So he did all these things to stay out of school. So again, it looked like separation anxiety, but it wasn't. So when you have children who are displaying ADHD or these kind of symptoms, make sure that you get a thorough assessment before you jump at the first behavior.
Right.
And this is why we urge schools, don't just focus on the behavior. Think about the child behind the behavior and what that child's trying to do. If you just focus on the behavior, you're going to miss something important.
Right. And before we jump into a little bit, just a smidge about treatment, I also want to mention, you know, I used the word pandas a few minutes ago. Sometimes in young children, what we see is following a strep infection. We will see OCD-like behaviors, OCD behaviors, or even Tourette-like behaviors, motor tics or vocal tics, and some of those kinds of things. And we call that PANDAs, pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders associated with strep. And so there's some folks over in Tampa here in Florida, and in different states, there's different people doing research in these areas, but looking at, you know, what is happening as a result of this strep infection that may be causing these behaviors, these OCD and Tourette-like behaviors, because there are some very specific brain regions that are associated with OCD, because it's a, you know, it's an impulse inhibition issue. That's repetitive thought issue, and so there's some areas, sort of right around there behind your eyes, that are really associated with OCD that we know, and so we want to see what's happening with strep infections and see if it's affecting some of those regions of the brain.
Right, and we also know that there could be a chemical imbalance. You know, the brain's primary inhibitory neurotransmitter, and if you have a shortage of that, you can't inhibit.
Right.
You have a hard time inhibiting these obsessive thoughts because you have a shortage of the chemical that you need to inhibit those thoughts.
Right.
You know, so there could be real physical reasons for this disorder.
And so when it comes to treatment, oftentimes we see certainly therapy, and we'll talk about that next, but one of the first things is medication.
Right.
And the typical medication that's being used now are antidepressants, SSRIs and things like that. And we sort of know the cautions associated with using SSRIs and other antidepressants in children, because there were those studies, or those reports at least, about 15 years ago or so, about the risk for an increased risk for suicidal ideation and suicide attempts in children, adolescents, and young adults on SSRIs and antidepressants. And so we have those black box warnings, and so we really work to monitor those who are taking those medications. That notwithstanding, it still is the primary treatment medically, medication-wise.
Right.
But what we have to remember is that many times with OCD, when OCD is what we're treating, those doses have to be pushed up a little bit higher than usual. You know, you may be on one dose if it's a generalized anxiety disorder or something like that, but when it's OCD, that dose has to be bumped up a little bit. And so parents get a little bit anxious about that, and as well they you know, understandably, but it does have to happen sometimes to get the benefit and the effects that you want to get.
Right, to get therapeutic, because it's a complicated process, but these medications bind to molecules in your brain.
Right.
And so you need to make sure you get enough that bind to those proteins to do the job.
Right.
And so you need more for OCD than you do for depression.
Right. And so that's the primary medical treatment. From a psychotherapeutic perspective, there's a number of things that we work on. Certainly, I think we always go with the trifecta. So we look at sleep, exercise, and diet, make sure that all of that is going well. You know, the substances that are needed to make the chemicals in your brain to inhibit those issues and those thoughts and compulsions and to treat the anxiety comes from our diet. So we have to make sure that we're eating well and that we're sleeping and exercising and all that kind of good stuff. Therapeutically, what we do is a wide range of things in the cognitive behavioral model, basically, where we do desensitization. I had a teenager that I was working with once who he was really strongly OCD as it relates to orderliness and structure, and his room was meticulous. And he has a younger brother, which is probably the worst thing for a teenager with OCD. And so anytime the brother would come into this room and touch something, this teenager would spend the next 2 or 3 hours redoing everything.
Right.
And so just an example of the therapy that we did with him is, you know, I would have him sit in his room and, you know, do some relaxation techniques, and then offset one of his pictures just a little bit, just to make it a little bit crooked, just to make him just a little bit uncomfortable, and have him sit there and, you know, deal with it. And before it got to where it was out of control, where his OCD anxiety was really pushing it, I would have him fix it and kind of then use the breathing techniques and everything. And he did that several times a day. And, you know, he came back a couple weeks later and he was so excited because he said, "Dr. Bernie, I didn't make my bed today." And I always laugh about it because, you know, that was therapeutic success. You know, so many times we work with kids to just make your bed in the morning. But the therapeutic goal for this kid was to not make his bed. And he did it. He was able to get through that. He managed it real well.
Yeah, I got a call from a principal one time. I have four children. One child principal called, was all excited. She said, he misbehaved today in school. He actually misbehaved a little bit. So he's, and we were laughing about it because it looks like normal behavior, yeah, you know, so yeah. She was excited. Change your body.
Yeah.
Change your body, change your brain.
Right.
So you have to, this is one of those areas where nutrition, sleep, and exercise are really, really critically important.
Yeah. Okay? They're at the root. And then using other forms of relaxation techniques.
To change your brain.
Right. Mm-hmm. And really working to get yourself comfortable
right.
with things moving a little bit outside those compulsive.
And you have to change your behavior. Yeah. Again, we talked about that many times on this program. Change your behavior, change your brain.
Right.
But it takes a long time. You have to be patient. You have to hang in there. It will change eventually. Yeah. But if you change your body with the trifecta, and you change your thinking, you change your behavior, your brain will start to change.
Yeah.
And you can manage this thing. So a combination of medication and non-medical therapies.
Right.
Absolutely. Good way to go.
Yep. So, all right. Well, read the article. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's from the Washington Post from last week. It's mm-hmm. it's a great article. And if you have any other questions about OCD or anything, let us know.
Just call.
It's
if you suspect that you or your child or spouse or some relative or friend, give us a call.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
Happy to talk to you about it.
All right. So get out and exercise today. Eat well. Be happy. And we'll see you tomorrow morning. All right.
You have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye.